You're listening to KFSK Public Radio Petersburg. I'm Matt Lichtenstein, and this is a borough election special. The question facing area voters this fall is whether the Home Rule Borough of Petersburg should be incorporated and the city of Petersburg dissolved. Ballots are slated to go in the mail by near the end of this month, November 26th roughly, and they're due back in the mail no later than December 18th. And specifically, the question on the ballot, according to the sample ballot provided by the Division of Elections, is, shall the Home Rule Petersburg Borough be incorporated? Incorporation of the Home Rule Petersburg Borough will result in the concurrent dissolution of the existing Home Rule City of Petersburg. The city of Kuprnoff would remain. It also asks voters to choose who they'd like to see on the assembly and the as mayor and school board, planning commission, and hospital board. There are no contests at this point for those seats, and there are some seats that will be vacant and have to be appointed afterwards if the borough passes. In the office of mayor, voters will see two names, Mark Jensen, current city councilor and mayor pro tem, and Don Koenigs, who is the also on the city council right now, but Don has pulled out and is not going to run for mayor, so he's actually said specifically vote for Mark. So that's what you'll see on the ballot, roughly, as you get it in the mail sometime in the near future. The guests with me in the studio today to talk about this issue include, we have City Manager Steve Giesbrecht and City Borough Attorney Jim Brennan, as well as Kuprnoff Mayor Dana Tinas and Duncan Canal resident Bob Lynn. Thanks for joining us today, guys. Appreciate you being here in the studio. We'd also like to hear from area residents, whether you're in Petersburg or outside of Petersburg and would be affected by the borough or brought into the borough. You can call in at 772-3808 or 1-888-772-3808, which is a toll-free number. You could try that if you're outside of the city of Petersburg. You can call in to comment or make questions if you go on the air and join us on the show here today. If you're listening live today, which is November 19th. Again, the number 772-3808. Well, I want to start off with kind of the basic question that I think you guys have been asked several times before, but to the city of Petersburg, folks, why form a borough and why include the areas that are included? And why don't I start with City Manager Steve Giesbrecht?
Thanks, Matt. I think the biggest thing with the formation of the Petersburg borough is we have a quality of life here that's just unsurpassed everywhere. The borough gives us the best opportunity to be able to continue that. That includes the services we provide for the people that live in the city limits, as well as those people that take advantage of those services that are here because of the city of Petersburg being here. It provides an increased revenue stream, both with state revenue sharing and the potential for mill property tax and sales tax. That allows us to continue to take care of things like aquatic centers and libraries and roads and police and fire protection, and have those available for the businesses that need them to be able to exist here, and provide services, again, not only for the people that live here, but the people that live outside of the existing city limits. We included the areas we did, I think in some ways, to avoid conflict with down the road with Juneau and Wrangell. We went to Wrangell's northern border and Juneau's southern border, and to kind of take advantage of not leaving gaps at the same time, protecting our main economic driver, which is the commercial fishing fleet. We want to make sure that that continues to be the driver of this economy, and who I think I've said a couple times is that this is a fishing town. Juneau is not. No offense to our neighbors from the north, but they don't necessarily understand commercial fishing like the people here do, and we want to make sure that we protect that for our industry down the road. So we think it's a great opportunity for the people of Petersburg to kind of solidify our area and make sure that we continue to have a good feeling and able to protect our lifestyle that we have.
And Jim Brennan, do you want to add to that?
I don't have much to add to that. I think Steve laid it out pretty well. And I want to make clear, I'm here at the request of the city and on behalf of the petitioners, primarily in an informational capacity to respond to people's questions. I know there have been a lot of good questions about exactly what does this all mean. And so I'm going to try to be in that role more than an advocacy role here today. But I'm not going to hesitate if I think that there is a misstatement being made by either side, something that is not quite in accordance with either my understanding of the law or the facts or something. If I get an opportunity, I will respond to that. But I don't have anything to add to what Mr. Giesberg said.
Okay. And in response, basically sort of the same question, but in reverse to Bob and Dana, and I guess in a nutshell, if you could describe why are you guys opposing this borough as presented? And maybe start with Bob, and if you want to pull the microphone, or Dana, if you want to pull the microphone, you're good. There you go.
Right. I don't think a nutshell is going to describe it, but I'll start.
Well, just for a start, but okay. we'll talk about details, but go ahead.
All right. I'm Dana Tinas, and I live across the water on Kupernoff Island, not too far from where my grandpa once kept a herd of dairy cows up Petersburg Creek. I'm the current mayor of the city of Kupernoff, but unlike the city of Petersburg's representatives who are here today, Mr. Giesbrecht and Mr. Brennan, I'm not being paid to be here. I am an active opponent of this borough because I do not see any long-term benefits coming out of it. I do see a short-term infusion of $600,000 that will get sucked into city computers for planning purposes and paperwork, and a possible gain from more state revenue sharing monies, which the state is always reminding us is likely to be less or even zero in coming years, depending on the will of the legislature, although these revenue sharing monies will no longer be exclusively spent inside the city of Petersburg, service area 1. Those revenues will be spent community-wide. That means borough-wide. I see some remote properties flooding the market as Petersburg attempts to sell some of the lands they'll acquire from the state. But then I see the bills catching up. Thanks.
Okay. Well, that was a summary. We'll talk about more details. Definitely. Go ahead, Bob. Bob Lynn of Duncan Canal.
Yeah, I'm Bob Lynn out in Duncan Canal there. I'd like to talk about it from a different standpoint. I was one of the members of the Charter Commission. And at the time, the decision was already made by the city to decide what area was involved with this. So that wasn't an issue with the Charter Commission. The Charter Commission grouped because we really did, with the details of how this borough should be set up. When the charter was finished, some of the charter members left with the expectations that there would be substantial interaction both with the folks that live in Petersburg and those that live out to iron out the details. That never occurred. There were no public meetings or other means of discourse to discuss options and needs. True, there were several meetings held by the city after they began collecting signatures, but it was too late to change. At that point, to change the petition or charter would require the city to start over to gather signatures, and that wasn't going to happen. There was also no point up front, or there's no process up front to explain the legal ramifications to the public along with the various options to organize a borough. I'd like to say that over time, from the time I started on this, and I've spent hundreds of personal hours at my own expense doing this, my knowledge level of this whole issue has significantly increased. What I knew about it when we did the charter and what I know about it now is probably two very substantially different levels. And that, the product, I was totally for the borough when it began. Now I'm not a real proponent, and I'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay. Okay, and yeah, I do want to get into that detail. So one of the questions I want to start with addressing, and we've talked about this before, we've heard about it from proponents and opponents, but I'd like to talk about the issue of school funding and try and clarify what the city's expectation is in terms of school funding. What you expect to gain, if anything, in school funding from the borough, and if there's additional costs that you're facing in terms of providing for education beyond the current size school district.
Sure, I'll take that one, Matt. This is Jim Brennan. There's an easy answer and there's a more complicated answer here. Let me give the easy one, that a borough formation is going to result in more funding for the Petersburg schools than is the existing situation. To get into the complexity of that a little bit, funding for the basic need, which is the basic amount that is required to be provided to a local school based upon the number of students, that that is a sum of two things. One is the required local contribution. In other words, the minimum local contribution by the local municipality, and the other is the state contribution. Obviously, if the required local contribution is higher, the state contribution is less. But they total the basic need. The second part of the local contribution is the voluntary local contribution, which Petersburg has always provided, and which is part of the explanation for why you have excellent schools here.
They haven't always provided it in full, Jim. In fact, they haven't in the last few years. They could have given more.
I'm sure they could have, but they have provided voluntary contribution above the required local contribution. And the thing about that is that the voluntary contribution of the local community is not offset by a reduction in state funding. In other words, the more that's provided as a voluntary contribution, the more that goes to the school. Now, that becomes more significant now because just about the time that the Petersburg borough petition was coming to a local boundary commission hearing, just prior to that, the legislature had changed the law so that the required local contribution was reduced from 4 mils on the value of all real and personal property in the municipality to 2.65 mils. The impact of that here is that anything that Petersburg contributes, whether as a city or a borough, above 2.65 mils constitutes a voluntary contribution that does not experience a corresponding offset of state funding. So how does borough formation come into play with all that? Well, because now there will be more taxable property, real property, outside of the existing city limits, albeit at a lower mill rate, which is currently anticipated to be 4 mils, that's going to result in an additional estimated $184,000 per year in a local contribution. And most of that will be considered voluntary contribution and therefore not offsettable by a reduction in state funding. So as a consequence of these two developments, both the state change in the law that reduces the required local contribution to 2.65 and the formation of the borough, if that occurs, two things will happen. One, there will be more state funding for the local schools in Petersburg. And two, there will be more tax revenues which can be contributed to schools in town, which is going to mean more funding from Petersburg. So there'll be more state funding, more Petersburg funding of the local schools.
Dana, I can see you wanted to respond there, or maybe it's Bob.
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
I partly agree with Jim. The state share has been decreased on the mill rate to 2.65. However, I disagree with him from the standpoint that it's going to make a difference in the city's funding of the schools. The funding is based on headcount. When you have a borough and you increase this 97 times bigger, there's no increase in headcount. And then let's look at it a little bit differently. When you have a borough this size, 97 times bigger, you're going to have additional expenses. We had $341,000 increase between the sales tax and the property tax.
In terms of if a borough is formed, that there's revenue.
That's correct. So that money is going to be used for something. I see in the future that the Petersburg's revenue sharing funds are going to go down. I think some of the PILT funds, the federal funds, are going to decrease and so forth. For the city to maintain services that they currently have to all the residents, I really, in the longer term, don't see any increase that's going to occur in school funding. I'd like to see it, but I don't believe it's going to happen.
Let me just clarify, Bob, and we have a phone call we want to take too, so caller, just bear with us for one more second here. When you're saying you don't see the funding, you're concerned about the future funding, you're talking about not that the city would lose as a result of borough formation, but that if the PILT funding, the payment in lieu of taxes, funding from the federal government declines or isn't kept in place, or as well as other sources like revenue sharing decline overall, then the city, you don't foresee that the city would continue to get the revenue sharing it's projecting, because you think that would decline from the state's perspective anyway?
no matter which one of those sources decrease, the city is going to have to make a decision of how they're going to spend a less amount of revenue that in stream that they currently have. In other words, a smaller amount. So then do they have to decide, are we going to reduce services to the residents, or are we going to fund the schools at the same rate we are, or at a higher rate for that matter? And I think that's a decision they're going to have to make.
Matt, if I may.
And, yeah, go ahead.
To actually both points, Bob's correct. It's one of the reasons that the borough passage is so important. Those are two funds that could potentially go down, just like they could go down as us staying a city of Petersburg. And the borough passing provides an opportunity to replace those funds as well in the event that those funds are taken away by the federal government or the state. So it's basically a win-win. The borough has extra funds coming in that could be used towards the school and other services, or in the event those funds go away, they're there to replace those funds so that we can continue to fund the school the way we do.
Meaning the additional revenue from property taxes.
Correct. The second piece that and Ms. Tina has talked about is this increased cost thing. This has been debated in the newspaper several times. It's been proven time and time again. The transition plan, the petition, there's no increased costs for the borough. We talked to Rangel.
It's just been a
Dan, let's not interrupt, but we'll I'll go to you right after Steve.
Pardon me.
Oh, that's okay.
And these statements that costs are going to go up, there's no specifics behind it. Whereas we've provided a transition plan that very clearly shows there's no increased cost. I think that's important for the taxpayers to understand, and the people. That's why we talked to Rangel. We talked to other boroughs about what was their experience when they became a borough. And the answer was, no, our cost did not go up.
And so, Dana, let me give you the last word on this topic just for a minute here, and then we'll go to a caller. But go ahead, Dana.
Well, actually, I spoke to Heidi Rice, who called an assemblyman down in Rangel, and he said it's not true that Rangel has not hired anybody new. In addition to the policeman that was paid for by a grant, there was a public works person and perhaps one other person. So I don't think we've got the full story there about the costs in Rangel. And I'd like to hear what the caller has to say.
Okay. Well, we've got a caller. So at line one, sorry to keep you waiting there. Lots of complex stuff to talk about. Go ahead. You're on the air if you're still there.
Yes, I'm still here. And I have a question for Mr. Brennan.
Go ahead.
The ramps down to the harbors have numerous business signs, bulletin boards, notices, and et cetera hung on the frames. The concerned citizens of the unorganized borough asked the harbor master for permission to hang 2 Sea Cub bulletin boards on the north and south harbor ramps. The harbor master said it was okay. Sometime a couple of weeks ago, someone, and we assume that was the city, removed the Sea Cub bulletin boards, but none of the others. Is this not an act of discrimination on part of the city?
And thanks, caller, for your question. And go ahead, Jim, if you want, or Steve, if you want to reply.
Steve, you want to reply to that?
I can. Hi, Tom. The city council of the city of Petersburg voted as a body to promote the passage of the borough and has the authority to approve or disapprove of any postings on city property. I believe the harbor master herself was the one who took the Sea Cub advertisements off the harbor walkways. It has them at her office if anybody wants them back. But we did run this by our city attorney. The city has kind of broad powers when it comes to what can be put on public property and not, and the city council has the authority to do that, and that's what was used as far as removing the anti-borough stuff off city property because permission was not gotten long-term by the city council.
Tom, go ahead and give a chance to
respond to that from a legal standpoint. Is that not discrimination?
Jim?
First of all, this question was not put to me when Steve referred to the city attorneys. He's referring to the regular city attorney who gave that opinion, and he apparently did examine it, and I'm going to defer to his opinion rather than wing a question like this. Thank you.
Tom, do you have another question, or you want to?
No, okay. That's all for now.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Bob, you had a comment?
I do have a comment. There was a couple people... I have to correct Mr. Grisbeck. There's a couple people that did ask permission from the harbor master. I really thought it would have been at least nice for somebody to come back to those individuals and say why and how it was, why they were taken down, but that never happened.
Well, I want to jump onto the issue of the area that we're talking about for burrow formation, and maybe I can have either Steve or Jim kind of just so for folks in the public who still aren't quite sure exactly what's included here, to lay out what we're talking about here. I was thinking about doing it myself, but I'd rather have you guys actually lay it out and talk about what areas are included in the burrow, what communities, neighborhoods, and roughly how many people are we talking about adding into the residences? Whoever would like to take that?
I'll take the first shot at it. This is Jim. The boundary goes over, let's go around clockwise. It goes down the mainland, the Canadian boundary, down to where it abuts the northern boundary of the Wrangell, the city and borough of Wrangell. Then on the south side, it follows that over to a point on Sumner Straits where it comes up and intersects the south end of Kuprinoff Island, somewhere in the Totem Bay area. And then it comes up through a series of ridge lines on Kuprinoff Island that care was taken to avoid getting into areas that were traditionally recognized Cake Tlingit areas. And then comes across the island on the south side of, I guess it would be the east side of Portage Bay, and then crosses Frederick Sound over to the mainland shore, follows the mainland up past Farragut Bay, around Fanshawe, and up the East Stevens Passage shore, up to Endicott Bay, actually up to Point Coke, which is the point by which you turn into Tracy Arm and Endicott Arm. And then it cuts across to the mainland there and goes up the ridge line between Tracy Arm and Endicott Arm so as to divide the watersheds, to leave Tracy Arm to future expansion of the city and borough of Juneau. That boundary line then goes back over to the Canadian border and back to, I guess you'd call it, the point of beginning.
So it would include, obviously, all of Mitkoff Island, all the residences there, residences down in Duncan Canal, Keene Channel, all the way up and down the Wrangell Narrows, folks out in Point Agassiz, out in Farragut Bay, and so on. I think, are we talking about roughly another 200, 250 people? Is that, roughly, I think I recall seeing that number?
Yes.
And as far as I want to touch specifically on the city of Kuprinoff, and one of the reasons I wanted to have Dana here, of course, and talk about the impacts of the city of Kuprinoff. I want to take a caller, though, because we do have a caller, and I don't want to make him wait too long. So we're going to go ahead and take this caller on line one. Hopefully I got you there. Are you on the air, line one?
Hi. I'm here.
Go ahead.
I was just calling to talk about the area. I don't know if people realize that this square miles that Petersburg's boundary includes, there's 4,347 square miles, which is the second largest borough or proposed borough in the region, second to Ketchikan, which is 4,840. Sitka has 2,874 square miles, Wrangell 2,570, Juneau 2,716. And so I think it's, you know, that's an important factor as well, but I'm just calling too because I really have wanted to have questions answered factually, because becoming a borough is really going to affect our family. We live in Petersburg. We have lots of property, pay lots of property tax here, but we also have a home site in the outlying area, so I guess we're outliers too. And I'm a total proponent of local control, but I'm scared to death that I'm going to lose my property outside my home site because I'm not going to be able to pay the property tax. And I just haven't been made to feel more, confident about that. And I really want to support what's going to be best for my community. But I feel like the more I've looked into it, the more I find that maybe it isn't in my best interest. But if I ask questions, I sort of you know, I'm vilified for the questions I ask, but it's really real. I mean, these are, this is my home. This is where I raise my family. This is where I have, you know, the things that I have. And I think I'm not the only one. I think the fear is probably the biggest deal. I mean, we, you know, we want to do what's best for our town. So
well,
anyway.
Let's hang on the line for a minute here. And I think you've kind of called it just the right time as we were just getting into the areas that are included in the impacts and stuff. And I was going to jump to Kupernov specifically as a city, but maybe we can just talk for a minute about that, the question that you have about the impacts to folks, whether they live or own property outside of the city, and what that will mean in terms of taxes and those sorts of things or options available to them. So I'd maybe start with Steve or Jim on that. And I guess the first question, and caller, correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess you're asking basically, yeah, what happens when the borough is formed? How much are you going to be required to pay? What does it mean for the amount of property you have, and are you going to be able to afford it? And maybe go ahead. It looks like Jim's ready to answer some of that anyway.
Yeah, well, let me just talk about timing. First of all, the property tax won't be imposed on the areas outside the service area, meaning outside the existing city limits, for the first year. So that wouldn't kick in until 2014 because it's going to be too late to get into the assessment cycle to have that done this year. But after that, it will be at least what's currently anticipated as a 4 mil property tax. Now, the first assembly makes the decision as to what is the actual property tax to be imposed out there. So
they could choose to increase it if they wanted to.
They could choose to increase, they could choose to decrease it.
To the 2.65 mils or even less if they wanted to pay the extra.
Possibly less, but at least down to the 2.65, I think that would be, you know, definitely that you wouldn't be able to challenge that. You know, I want to just go back to address the caller's questions here. First of all, she shouldn't feel vilified for asking good questions. These are excellent questions, and they should be answered. You know, I understand there's always fear of the unknown, and that's what we're trying to do today is to give some answers so there'll be more knowns than unknowns here. So her first question, though, had to do with the size of the borough, physical size of it. I'll defer to her analysis of the statistics for square mileage in Southeast Alaska. Maybe it is the second largest in Southeast Alaska. I know that statewide, the proposed Petersburg borough would be on the relatively smaller side, be below the average of the size of Alaskan boroughs. So it's not out of whack with what's anticipated size-wise for boroughs in Alaska, and it certainly makes sense to have it extend up to the boundaries of the borough to the north and down to the boundaries of the borough to the south, particularly where Petersburg can show such strong economic connections with those areas. But to her point about the taxes, I would again, you know, if it is 4 mil, I would again look at other boroughs in Alaska, and 4 mils is actually below average. Few boroughs charge less than that. In Alaska, I'm familiar with one borough where I myself have remote property where I'm actually paying 6 mils, and that's the Sitka borough. Nobody likes to pay taxes. Nobody inside a city or in outlying areas likes to pay taxes. That's certainly the case. I understand her concern, but this is one of the decisions to be made by the electorate, whether they feel it's fair for some of the cost of government here in Petersburg to be shared outside the city limits.
Well, can I just say one thing, too? It's not that I don't want to pay taxes. I pay a bunch of taxes already. But it's that not knowing what the assessment's going to be on the property. It's a large piece because it's a home site. It's not just, 5 acres down at the end of the Narrows. It's a big chunk of property. And I'm not the only person in that situation. Many people in the proposed borough area whose families homesteaded the site, back before statehood. And those folks are also going to have to sell some of their property to pay their property taxes. And do we want all this property chopped up into little pieces and have a whole bunch of people owning, this area that's outside our community? I just keep thinking about the unintended consequences of this whole thing.
Well,
I think Bob was going to address that issue as well, so let me give him a chance to comment.
Yes, yeah, so I'd like to pursue that a little bit more. When the Charter Commission looked at it and examined, built the charter, they also looked at various ways to put it together in terms of the petition so that there would be differential tax rates based on closeness to town and so forth. I don't remember exactly, but I think we looked at seven different options. And when we left, I think there was expectations that there would be a set of criteria to arrive at what those various mill rates would be. When we left, and after we left, after 5 or 6 years, what ended up was four mills. We're going to charge four mills, and obviously when we do that, you're going to get no services or nothing else. The other part of that is that, and I agree with folks who have gone back and looked at the history of what Petersburg's done. They've done annexation. They've charged those people higher taxes, but yet for no services. And the concern we have, I think, out there is just that. There's absolutely no trust.
Mm-hmm. And Dana?
There are boroughs up north that pay no property taxes. And the charter, as it's written, doesn't actually say that any tax has to be imposed. And it doesn't set a limit on the taxes either. The borough assembly that comes in will be able to choose. And I'm wondering why they would choose four mills. Why not 2.65? Why not nothing initially?
Did you want to respond to that?
I'll just respond briefly. I'm not aware of any borough where they're paying no taxes.
Northwest Arctic Borough.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask specifically about, caller, thanks for calling in. I think we'll continue talking.
Yeah, one more question.
Sure, go ahead.
Since you have an attorney there.
Yeah.
My last question has to do with another issue that's related to homestead sites and mineral rights. I understand that the borough cannot tax minerals or trees. So you can take property for non-payment of taxes, but then would that mean that you can't take the minerals or the trees in the property? I'm just curious about all that.
Obviously on a practical level, you couldn't take the property without the trees and minerals in it. I think the question you had, if I understand who this caller is was presented to the Petersburg City Assessor, and that was the response I understood him to give. I don't think that means you can separate out and foreclose on the timber rights or the mineral rights, but certainly you can on the property, even if whether it's homestead or homesite.
Okay, caller, thanks for calling in. And I wanted to address a couple issues, things that came up along those same lines that the caller was concerned about. I've heard that there are options for people, for instance, like providing an easement or putting the lands in a trust, conservation trust, and having them have an easement. Has the city considered the possibility that some folks may choose to put their lands into some sort of a trust that's not taxable? Or is there such a thing that you know of where they donate the lands to a conservation organization or something like that, and then just have an easement for their own home and requirements that, you know, the lands can't be used for other things, but yet they wouldn't be taxed because they're in a nonprofit. I don't exactly know how it works, but I think, Jim, you might know what I'm talking about.
I vaguely know what you're talking about, Matt.
I have heard of people interested in doing that. I was curious what that would mean for city's tax rules.
And I know sometimes that's done, for example, when a Corps of Engineers situation where somebody has encroached on wetlands, there's a sort of a one-for-one trade-off that's required by the federal government there. So that sometimes results in the property owner giving property, dedicating it to a conservation trust that's owned by somebody else, but retaining some kind of easement, right? So getting to your question, I think what happens there is that, tax-wise, is that the value of the private easement that's retained by the private property owner, that's a property interest which would be subject to taxation based upon a fair assessment of its value by the assessor.
And Dana, did you?
Yes, I know of a couple who live out remotely, and they have done exactly that with their property, and they say the city will be surprised to find that it's not worth as much as they think it is.
Okay, well, we have a caller, and I want to take this. Looks like we have a couple here, so we'll go ahead and take line three here. And caller on line three, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just calling in. We own 46 acres up Knig Slough, and we were taken in by the Wrangell Borough. I lived in Petersburg 71 years. I'm going to pay taxes on property. I just soon pay it to a Petersburg Borough. We have 46 acres. It's on Knig Slough, about 600 feet right on the water. And what people need to realize is that those properties aren't assessed equally to what that 46 acres would be if it were in town. Our total tax is $170.80 on that property. We also have 75 acres in Farragut Bay. And if I'm going to pay 4 mil tax on that 75 acres in Farragut Bay, I would much rather pay it to the borough of Petersburg rather than some other borough, such as the borough of Juneau.
Well, two questions for you. One is, so you're saying that the total tax you pay on that, I'm sorry, the 46 acres up Knig Slough is $170 a year?
Yes.
But you're in, obviously, the Wrangell borough includes the Stikine area, and Knig Slough is on the Stikine.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and I should ask the Petersburg folks. So Petersburg doesn't have any plans to move into the Stikine area, do you?
Well, they can't.
Yeah.
It's already been taken.
Exactly.
That's a point. That's a point. It's already been taken. But what I am saying is that the 75 acres that we have in Farragut Bay, I would much rather be paying the 4 mil tax, and I'm sure that property won't be assessed at the same level that 75 acres would be if it were located within the city limits of Petersburg. I think that's what people have to realize, is that the assessments are going to be different than they would if they were located on the island with all of the amenities that that we have and that they don't have. So, anyway, that's my point.
Can I have you hang on the line for a second? Dana wanted to comment on this.
Sure.
I don't know why you think that the city of Petersburg would act in that way, because there are people who live remotely and yet they are quote unquote inside the city of Petersburg limits. They live a mile from the road and they've been paying full assessment value since 1982, even though when Point Frederick was taken into the city of Petersburg, the city promised that every year they would do a review in order to determine whether or not the valuation should go up. They started at 4 mils, and in 4 years it jumped to 10, or whatever it was at the time. It might have been 8 in 1982. And they don't have police. They don't have fire. They have obviously no infrastructure, and so they don't have any services.
These are folks who live a mile off the road at Frederick Point?
They do, but they're City of Petersburg residents, and they're paying full mill rate. And the city doesn't even come out and plow for them. A couple weeks ago, they couldn't make it to church, or they made it to church with chains. And inside the City of Petersburg, there was no snow, but they had 6 inches of snow out there. And we may not see them the rest of the winter. They might not even get to vote on this issue. Of course, they're already in the city of Petersburg, but they have strong feelings about it.
Okay. And Steve, you wanted to reply to this issue as well?
Well, just from the standpoint of the assessment, it's one of the things we talked about, the state assessor as well as our assessor who does the property, and he's the gentleman who also did the Wrangell Borough. And he said the real issue is people, the property that is remote is not worth as much as people are afraid it might be. And he said this was a common thing that came up when they went through the Wrangell Borough process, was the fear of very large tax bills. And in fact, it just turns out to not be that much.
Okay. And caller, can I ask you, were you worried about this before the borough went into place in Wrangell?
Yeah, I would just as soon be paying my 4 mils to Petersburg rather than to Wrangell. And I think people need to realize that if we don't form a borough and we don't take in these lands, somebody else is going to do that. And again, $170.80 on 46 acres on a 4 mil rate is not, to me, unreasonable. And I have faith in our council, as a lot of people don't, and our city government, that they're going to do the right thing here, and that these outlying areas will not be assessed as high as property in town. And I can't imagine that they're going to go any higher than 4 mils. So anyway, thank you for your time. Have a nice day and good luck.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. And I think that's it for the callers for now. So moving on to specifically the city of Kuprnoff, maybe can Jim or Steve lay out as far as the your understanding of how this would work for the city of Kuprnoff? And obviously I want to have Dana and Bob then talk about their concerns on that issue. But what does this mean to the city of Kuprnoff in terms of local government?
Well, actually, I think the key issue is as mentioned in the charter, is that the city of Kuprnoff remains as a separate government and will continue with their own rules, that the city of Petersburg borough will not have the authority to jump into city of Kuprnoff and start putting new laws or ordinances in place. It was done that way specifically to help support the city of Kuprnoff.
If I could just add to that, the charter provides that the city of Kuprnoff will remain and will continue to have all the powers it has now, and that it can pass ordinances and resolutions, even if they touch on the same subject matters that are governed by borough resolutions or ordinances. I would add that if there was a direct conflict, for example, if city of Kuprnoff purported to exempt its citizens from a Petersburg borough ordinance, the borough ordinance would prevail in that situation. But otherwise, the idea is to completely allow the city of Kuprnoff to keep on and going on as it is now.
Okay, and Dana?
Well, that sounds nice, but the fact of the matter is that a ballot issue could be raised to change the city of Kuprnoff. The city of Kuprnoff could be voted out of existence by the borough. Another thing is we will not be getting all the monies that we're currently getting. And we've talked about ways to minimize that impact. One of the things we might have to do is start charging people to use our trail. That is our trail over there. We have, it's within our city limits, and we also have the right to do as we see fit with it. And we might just send the bill to the city of Petersburg because it would be very difficult for us to collect, you know, a trail usage fee from individuals. We've even talked about property taxes, which is something we would never really want to do.
And I wanted to ask, you mentioned the city could, the borough could dissolve the city of Kuprnoff. Wouldn't it take the local boundary commission to put...
I don't think so. I think it would take a vote of the borough.
Can I address that? Yeah, this is Jim. No, in fact, the Petersburg borough could not dissolve the city of Kuprnoff unilaterally. It would be a local boundary commission matter. Somebody would have to file a petition for dissolution of the city of Kuprnoff. Anybody could do that. That's something which then go through a similar process to what we just had, and there would be a hearing in Kuprnoff on it, and the local boundary commission would decide that. Not a unilateral decision of the Petersburg borough.
So the borough potentially could propose that, as Dana's concerned about, but you're saying the LBC would have it would go through the LBC process like the borough.
Well, I suppose so, but it would certainly look funny, wouldn't it, for the Petersburg borough to propose that when right in its own charter, it says at the time of the founding of the Petersburg borough, if it is formed, that the city of Kuprnoff is supposed to live on.
Well, we have a bunch of phone calls. We have got three, so if people are okay, I'm going to go ahead and take these phone calls. We have one right now on line one. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I got in a little bit late here, but could somebody speak to the idea of how we can possibly remain unorganized, given the way the Constitution sets out dividing up the state into organized and unorganized boroughs, and they've never really formed an unorganized borough that meets the requirements?
Okay. Well, thanks, caller. And go ahead, Bob, you wanted to address that, and I'll start with you and maybe then go to Jim Brennan.
Yeah, I did. We did quite a bit of research on that issue. There is nothing in the Constitution that requires the formation of a borough. As a matter of fact, there is a large area in Alaska that it's an unorganized borough. If you go back and look at the legislative history of it, there was concern at the time that the unorganized borough was to be broken into smaller parts, and that never happened. The legislature decided to keep it as one unorganized borough in the state of Alaska. There was concern, and there's kind of scare tactics out there that, you know, well, if we don't become a borough, then somebody else is going to swallow us up. That simply is not going to happen. If you look at the rules that they have to follow in the statutes, it just won't happen. I think that in the Constitution and back in the legislative history, they talk about, is the time ripe for the formation of a borough? And I think that's one of the things we're really addressing right now, is it really ripe? There's a very, very strong contingency that says no, and there's another contingency that says yes. And with that, I'll pass it on.
And Jim, you wanted to reply too.
Yeah, there's not much to reply to because I think Bob's summary of that's pretty correct. The Constitution says that the state will be formed into boroughs, organized and unorganized, in accordance with procedures and standards established by the legislature. So it has been just one unorganized borough out there. People can argue about whether that unorganized borough is really being administered. And effectively, the legislature constitutes like the borough assembly for the unorganized borough. But there's nothing that absolutely mandates formation of a borough. The Constitution does encourage their creation. The Alaska Supreme Court has weighed in on that a couple different times and noted that the Alaska Constitution encourages the formation of boroughs, and I think the Constitutional Convention, the hope and the anticipation of the members who expressed themselves there was that the whole state would end up ultimately in organized boroughs, and that has taken some time. Also, this other question about that Bob brought up, if we don't form a borough, somebody else will swallow us up, meaning right here in Petersburg. I tend to agree with that as well. But I think the more related concern here is if Petersburg does not form a borough that extends to the areas which are important to it economically, there is a possibility that another borough will swallow that up. And we do have that pending issue with Juneau. And if the Petersburg borough does not pass, City Borough of Juneau is waiting in the wings with its existing petition to annex all the way down to Cape Fanshawe.
And Dana, you had a comment as well?
I do. I'd like to address that scare tactic. The city and other borough advocates, they keep saying Juneau to watch people jump. Exactly what is Juneau poised to do? State statutes make it pretty plain that an area cannot be annexed without the consent of the group being annexed. This is different from a borough, which after the initial petition gets the foot in the door, so to speak, is pure majoritarianism. The most votes win. So a borough is an unprincipled way to suck people and land into the boundaries, while annexation allows residents to vote it down. Juneau is already a borough, and they can't boroughize us. The only way they could annex Petersburg is if Petersburg says, please come take us, we wish to be part of Juneau. So this is a safeguard built into state code by early planners, which they failed to give minority groups being forced into a borough. But the people who are using these scare tactics extend this into the notion that somehow Juneau can come and take Petersburg's fishing grounds. What exactly does that mean? Petersburg fishermen already fish in the waters of the Juneau borough and Sitka and Ketchikan and Wrangell. And have they stopped you from fishing there? Can they? No. The state and the feds are in charge of fishing grounds. Can they take Petersburg's fish tax monies away? That depends on where Petersburg fishermen decide to sell their fish. I know of some pro-borough Petersburg fishermen who sell their fish in Juneau already when they believe they'll get a better price for their fish than with Petersburg processors. So on those occasions, the fish tax money goes to the city and borough of Juneau. But what if, scary thought, Juneau decided to enact a sales tax on fish, such as Bristol Bay has done? There's still no problem. Just take your harvested fish out of the Juneau borough boundaries to sell it, and you will avoid the tax. By the way, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, and Wrangell could already impose this tax if they chose to do so. All they have to do is enact an ordinance. Why haven't they? No doubt, because they realize it would drive the sales of fish away from the processors in their boroughs. And if you have any questions about the complications of fish taxes, give Tim Cotton Gin at the State Tax Division a call. He would love to share his extensive knowledge with you.
Well, we've got lots of callers. Caller, I didn't mean to cut you off here, but did you have another? Did that address some of what you're asking?
Oh, mostly. I've seen language in state publications, though. I think the local boundary commission said the unorganized borough sweeps aside its constitutional requirements because it doesn't have like-minded, whatever you call it. It doesn't meet those standards like election districts have to have. There are actually many, many election districts in it. So it looked to me like they were saying the unorganized borough wasn't going to last forever in its current state. So that's all I have, though. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Well, I want to go to another caller or two. We've got a couple more people waiting on the line. So line two, I'm putting you through shortly here. Lots of buttons to press. And hi, line two, hopefully you're on the air there.
Yeah, good morning.
Go ahead.
I had a question for Brennan and Giesbrick, kind of going into this. You know, if the borough doesn't go through and we continually do have to subsidize people outside the borough with Petersburg's infrastructure, is it can it just be done through like a vote of the council to annex everyone on the road system on Midcoff? And the second question, again on subsidizing out of city people, our taxes pay like $1.8 million for the schools. We pay for the library services over about $250,000 just to heat our community pool. And if it was equitable, we should be charging people $20 every time they use a community center. That's what we pay with taxes plus our fee. Will the city council be looking at making those fees more equitable than they are now?
Okay, thanks for the question.
This is Steve Giesbrick. In the event that the borough doesn't pass, the city seated city council will have some decisions to make long term. And those can include reduction in services. They can include, you know, fee structures that are different than they are today. And it could up to including annexation. That was previously discussed by the city before my time. And I think, you know, a prudent city council would bring that back on the table to at least look at it. And, you know, is that a way to continue the service level that's provided? I can't speak for what a city council would want to do or want to look at. But the things you talked about are all definitely things that could be on the table and are within the power of the city council to look at and consider.
Okay, and I wanted to also ask about thanks. Are you still there, caller? Oh, I think we did go. And actually, we should probably take this last caller, and then we're going to take a quick break. Well, I think we have lots more to talk about, and we should come back for at least a little bit more after the break. But first, we're going to go ahead and take this caller so they don't have to wait through a break. So line three, I'm putting you on the air here, and line three, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Okay, now since the city wants so much more money, why don't they annex or extend the city limits past Papkeith? That's one question. And unlike one caller, I don't really trust the city. Then another question is, how about the people that are living in the lower 48 that won't be able to even vote on the borough and have property in the outlying areas? And one more thing, the people that come in from across the bay and use the facilities in Petersburg pay for every darn thing they use, and they pay taxes, and they pay city taxes. So I don't know what the last caller was griping about, because I don't think any of those people use the swimming pool or anything else unless they pay for it. That's all. Bye.
Okay, thank you for calling in. And I wrote down the last two questions. The first question, I think I got it, but go ahead. If the annexation question, city did look at annexing that area, but go ahead. Maybe if Steve or actually probably Jim might have a little more background on that.
Okay, well, first I was just going to respond to the last caller's question about people that live in the lower 48 and own property out in the outlying area won't be able to vote. She's absolutely correct, but that's the way it is under the American system. It's the residents of an area that vote. If the person in the lower 48 owned property in the city of Petersburg, but didn't live here, they'd have to pay property taxes, but they wouldn't be able to vote. So that's that's the way it is on that point. On annexation, Steve is correct. My understanding is that the City of Petersburg had an annexation petition on the table to annex areas down the road and to apply property taxes, but pulled that away in about 2006 in favor of seeking a borough instead. So if the borough doesn't go through, will that come back on the table? Perhaps. One other question related to that, if I could for just a moment,
sure,
relate back
fine.
To what Dana's point was earlier, that annexation can occur without the consent of the people. Well, yes, it can. That's the big difference between annexation and borough formation. Juneau or anybody else could annex based upon an act of the local council or assembly. They could. Without a vote of the people in the affected area. Their due process right would be to appear at the local boundary commission and testify against the annexation, but ultimately the local boundary commission decides. And to take that one step further, though, if the local boundary commission approves an annexation, the legislature, the very next legislative session, still has an opportunity to veto it.
Okay. Bob, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I want to ask Jim a question here. Is it?
Yeah, that's fine.
In the statutes and the rules, annexation and borough formation, there's two different sets of rules. Under annexation, my understanding is that a different level of services is required, and that's a question, not a comment.
An annexation by a city versus a borough formation, yes, it is two different. There, you need to show more connection to show an annexation to a city. It's got to be more like you have to show it's an area that really is more closely connected to the city, roads, electrical, et cetera. And we've had annexations or battles around the state, like in Homer, to go to the extended road area around Homer. So it is a different set of standards, both under statute and regulation, than for formation of boroughs.
So, for instance, you might be able to show more of a connection, say, to Papke's than to, say, Duncan Canal or something like that because there's a road or there's an electrical line.
For an annexation to a city, yes. For an annexation to a borough, that's a different question. An annexation to a borough would be very close to identical to the standards for incorporation of a borough in the first place.
And there's one other issue the caller asked about, and maybe we can just hit on that, and then we'll take a break here for a moment. And the issue was folks paying for what they use in the city. And we've heard that that's been kind of the heart of some of the argument for a while, where we've heard from, you know, folks who live outside the city limits feel as though they're being told they're not paying their share and don't agree with that. And some folks inside the city limits have said, well, you need to pay more to pay your share and so on and so forth. So maybe I'd like it'd be good if you could each address that argument, that concern as to what does sales tax pay for, what does property tax pay for, and because obviously people who live outside the city do pay sales tax when they come in, or they pay their mortgage fees and that sort of thing, or they pay to use the pool and that sort of thing. And anyway, so maybe I'll start with Steve Giesbrecht, if you can address that, and then I'd like maybe Dana or Bob to address it.
The city's general fund is generally what we're talking about here, which is police, fire, roads, parks and rec, library, things like that. Source of funds for that come in through, in some case, user fees, in some case, service fees of one sort or another. But for the most part, it's property taxes and sales tax that fund that aspect of city government. People that live outside of the city limits of Petersburg do pay sales tax when they come in, if they're eligible to pay it. In other words, they don't have a senior citizens discount or exempt card. They do not pay property tax. And whereas the residents that live here and own property inside the city limits pay property tax and sales tax as well. I think that's the biggest difference. So the argument that people outside of the city limits are not paying their way, that's a bad way to look at it. I mean, these are folks who come in here and shop and use the facilities here, and they pay sales tax, and we do appreciate, I'm sure the shopkeepers appreciate their business. But they have an opportunity to use facilities here that they're not paying the property tax on, whereas others do, and particularly being the school being the big one there. So, again, it's not a it shouldn't be looked at as far as people not paying their way. It should be more looked at as an opportunity to pay for some of those services that they're currently taking advantage of.
Okay, and let me get either Dan or Bob to
Can we
comment
both
on?
Have something to say
yeah,
here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, there are senior citizens inside the city, too, and they don't pay property taxes on the first $150,000 of their home, and they also tend to shop at the store on Tuesday, which is Seniors Citizen Day, and they don't pay sales taxes either. But I'd like you to think about asking local store owners, would they rather have more of us so-called freeloaders coming in and making nuisances of ourselves by coming in and buying things from the stores, or would they rather have fewer of us?
Bob?
You know, this question has been running around since the start of the borough formation process. We've had numerous discussions out there about service fees and user fees and so forth, and I have not heard anybody out there argue that there shouldn't be. It should be based. What I have heard though is that if you have boats sitting in the harbor that come from Seattle or some other place, then they ought to be subject to the same user fees, service fees, etc. And frankly, I think there ought to be user fees. I think there ought to be user fees for the library. I think there ought to be other user fees for the use of the facilities in town, if in fact folks do use them. I don't think there's any disagreement with that.
Okay. Well, I want to take a break for a moment here and see how people are faring in terms of whether we can continue on for too much more. But we've gone about an hour, and we're going to go at least a few minutes more after the break. So we'll take a break here for about 2 minutes, and we'll come right back and definitely call in at 772-3808 if you'd like to be on the show and ask a question. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes here.
Thank you.
You're listening to KFSK Public Radio Petersburg. In just a moment, we'll return to our call-in show on the election. We'll go for another half an hour or so, and we do have some callers waiting on the line. So live broadcast on Monday, November 18th, and just a minute or so, we'll come back to our borough call-in show with our guests, City Manager Steve Giesbrecht, City Borough Attorney Jim Brennan, Dana Tines, Mayor of Kuprnoff, and from Duncan Canal, Bob Lynn. They're all coming back here in just a moment, and we'll come back to the show. You are listening to KFSK Public Radio Petersburg. We're recording this live show on Monday, November 19th. Did I say 18th earlier? I meant the 19th. And if you're listening to us live, of course, give us a call at 772-380 if you have a question or comment that you'd like to go on the air with for our guests. And we do have three phone lines taken, so we're gonna go to the callers here and take some calls, and then I know that the guests have some topics they'd like to hit on as well, too. So we're going to go at least for another half an hour here and then wrap it up. So line one, I'm bringing you up here. You're on the air. Go ahead to our guests.
Yeah, I've got a question for Jim. You hear me, Jim?
Yes, I hear you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim, it's Ori.
Oh, hi, Ori. How are you doing?
Okay. I've got a question on the exemptions for 65-year-olds. Can you explain that for us?
I'll try, Ori. The exemption is for the first $150,000 of property value.
On your primary residence, is that right?
Yes.
Or does that answer your question?
Well, I'm wondering if that's being the case when the city did their cost analysis to find out what their take would be if they considered the demographics of the outliers age-wise. I think they'll find that they could probably cut that in half, their projection, if they didn't.
Did you take that into account, Steve?
If I may, I talked to the city assessor who did the comparisons for us, and to be honest with you, he took a flat assumption of a similar rate to what we have in other places and applied that to the out-of-borough properties, meaning we have X percent of senior discounts taken in the cities that he's done business with and in the city of Petersburg, and he applied that same percentage. So he did not do a house-to-house check to say, is this person going to be exempt or not? So
but he just said a certain percentage he expected or estimated would be senior and exempt.
Exactly. So potentially to the caller's benefit, if there's a higher percentage of 65 and older among the people living outside the city limits in primary residence, then that $185,000 in property tax revenue that's anticipated would be less.
So, Ori, does that address what you're concerned about?
Well, I'm asking an expert here. What percent did he use then?
Do you know, Steve?
Come up with that number.
Actually, I don't know what percentage he used.
Unfortunately, we don't have the assessor here, but Jim, you don't happen to know what the assessor used for percentage?
I don't know, but I'd just like to underscore the point that the $184,000 is an estimate. That's what it is. It's based upon that consideration and also just an estimate. This assessor knows something of the properties out in this area, but when it comes to actual assessments, it could be higher or lower than that.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in.
Well, we're not done quite.
Oh, no, go ahead. If you have another question, you're welcome to ask another question. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, the point is the people making the decisions don't know the numbers even and have pretty strong opinions on something that it would seem like the numbers would matter. Now, is the city police going to have jurisdiction in the outlying areas that are beyond the road?
Well, I can. This is Steve Giesbrecht.
Yeah,
I can
ahead, Steve.
Kind of speak. Jurisdiction stays with the state troopers, but as it is today, our officers do respond often as either backups or occasionally even as the primary if we don't have other law enforcement available. I mean, for example, somebody at the end of South End of Mitkoff Island calls and has a police issue. often it's our officers that respond to that because there's not a law enforcement trooper here. And, you know, the wildlife trooper is often otherwise engaged. So our guys actually help.
So essentially, they're, I believe, is it right there deputized to is that the right term?
I believe that's the right term, Matt, but I don't want to misstate that.
Okay. And wait.
Well, we're talking about off the roads, though.
Off the road system?
Yeah, which will lead to the other question of, in borough formation, are we required to have license and insurance for our vehicles, say, at Portage Bay?
And, Steve, maybe...
Actually, Steve. No, we do not. I mean,
that would be something the city borough assembly could potentially extend later on if it wanted to. Is that right, Jim? But it's not. It wouldn't be extended as a requirement. I don't know if the state would require it.
We're talking about license and insurance for vehicles?
For a vehicle.
That's a state matter, not... city matter or borough matter.
And Ori, Bob wanted to reply too on this.
Yes. The city's transition plan in the petition says that off Metcalf Island on the outlying area that the primary responsibility for law enforcement will remain with the state troopers.
Okay. Correct. Well, or maybe one more question. We've got a couple more callers, but go ahead if you have one more question,
okay.
Ori.
Okay. I got Jim on your, you have personal experience with the borough formation. As you mentioned there, what's your experience? Is it a good deal for you as a property owner, services-wise, when Sitka became a borough?
Well, you're getting down and personal now, Ori, but it became a borough before I personally owned property out in Baranof Warm Springs. But our experience has been kind of unique because the property owners in that bay formed an association, which then worked closely with the Sitka Borough Assembly to make sure that we were getting services that were commensurate, because out there we pay the same mill rate as someone in downtown Sitka does. So we've entered into kind of a unique arrangement. All in all of which, in answer to your question, I'd say, personally, yes, it has worked out fairly for us.
Okay.
One other question.
Go for it. One more.
For Jim.
Go ahead.
Why doesn't the state tax land outside the boroughs? What's their rationale for not doing that? Comes up in the legislature from time to time. Why doesn't the state do that?
That's a great question. I've wondered that, too.
Yeah. I sure can't answer for the state legislature. I know it's come up several times that they have, for example, talked about imposing a 4-mill tax everywhere, if partly to try to give more incentive and encouragement for people to go into boroughs. But, you know, it's the state legislature and the politics of it have not resulted in that coming into fruition.
Great questions, Ori. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. We're going to take another caller here. And line two, you are on the air. Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This has been an interesting program.
Thank you.
I have read the charter and the petition several times, and it's my impression that there's really no protection at all for us outliers to keep our way of life. Pretty much everything is at the whim of the borough council, and they could change their mind at any time and pretty much do what they want. So given that, there's really very little trust, at least on my part, as to what they're going to do. I don't feel they have my best interests at heart, and I don't think they even have a clue why it's important to me to not be beholden to anyone and not have to pay taxes for things I don't use. It's turned into kind of a David and Goliath situation here. We have the grassroots organization, if you will, of people that are opposing this borough, and we have dug into our own pockets to take out ads and get the information out on our point of view, and we've done all our research and our work on our own time, And my question is, how much has the city spent over the years on this borough formation thing? And I'm talking about city employee hours spent on writing the petition and the charter. There must be hundreds of hours there. Signs, ads. I know that there's like 15,000 budgeted for that. And I have heard that the real figure here is much, much higher, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Anyway, that brings me up to my question for Mr. Brennan. How much are you being paid today to appear on this show?
Yeah, this is Jim. I'm billing the city my normal rate of $250 an hour while I'm here. If I could come back and address your prior question about how much total has been spent by the city on this thing, I'd defer to Steve Giesbrecht on that. But I would say this, I've got enough familiarity with the process to know that the great majority of that was spent putting together the petition, working with the Charter Commission, and then ultimately getting approval from the Local Boundary Commission. So up to that point has been, I think, the great majority of the expenditure.
Steve, do you have a number at all on expenditures?
No, I actually don't. I mean, she's right that we budgeted $15,000 to City Council budgeted $15,000 to promote the borough, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me that it was $75,000 to $100,000. You know, in the process, it's taken place over many number of years. It just depends on how far back you want to go to look at numbers.
And I think Bob has something to add to that.
If the figures I have from the city's fiscal year 2011 budget are correct, I think their figure is $158,000 they spent in last fiscal year on it.
For attorney's fees, isn't it, Bob?
That's correct.
And then the year before, 2011, I think it was like $45,000.
Yeah.
So that's $200,000 just in the last couple of years.
Well, if I may, Matt, that line item includes our regular city attorney as well as our labor attorney.
No, it said borough attorney.
So there's lots of different things that go into that number.
Okay, well, we have lots of callers, so I want to go ahead and take some more callers. So thanks.
I have another question.
Okay, if you can keep it brief, and then we want to move on to other callers. Go ahead.
It hasn't been addressed how many hours that city employees have spent on this process and getting their regular pay and not doing the city work. It should be a matter of public record how much money is being spent kind of behind the scenes, okay?
Okay. Well, thanks for the question. And any response to that, Jim?
Well, actually, this is Jim. I'd like to respond to her earlier question, which was, what protections were built into the charter for what she and others have referred to as outliers in the proposed borough. A couple things. One, the charter ended up requiring three readings for any proposed ordinances that's a lot. That's about the extreme end of what you see in municipalities in terms of procedure before adoption of ordinance. You know, with the course of hearing as part of that process, and specifically notices to be posted in the city of Kuprnov and at Papke's Landing. The other protection I would note is that people in the outlying areas can run for the assembly or for the other offices, and I note that nobody from those areas applied for the assembly in this case. I can understand that. I think if I were in their position and I was opposed to formation of the borough, I could see that I might feel hypocritical running for office at the same time. Hopefully, if this borough goes through, those attitudes will change, and because I think the assembly would benefit from representation by people outside the existing city.
Dana, you wanted to respond?
Yeah, I noticed in the paper the last couple of weeks a number of people expressing astonishment that no one from the outside has been running for any of the open seats.
That was a question I had for you, actually.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Well, I sure do know why, and it seems to me that it's pretty evident nobody's been listening to what we've been saying. We have told people, we told the Local Boundary Commission, it is not only a hardship but also dangerous for us to come across the water at night, particularly in winter. And regular governmental sessions are not something that we could easily take part in.
I want to take another caller here, and you're on line line three. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, line three, you're on the air.
I don't know which line. Is this line three?
That's you. Go for it.
Hey, Matt, this is George Cole calling from the cute little state of Texas, where I got to admit that I feel a bit guilty walking up and down the beaches in my shorts and my sunscreen, but not guilty enough to put them away and fly home to your weather up there right now.
Okay. Well, anyway, when that sunny weather, go ahead.
I got a question for, well, let me make a couple of comments. First of all, back to school funding. Attorney Brennan said something about the city of Petersburg can give money to the school system without state penalty. And that's true up to a 2 mil cap, unless they've changed that. After that 2 mils, then there is a penalty from the state for exceeding a voluntary contribution in excess of 2 mils.
Let me just let Jim address that, and then we'll go to your second question, okay?
I wasn't making questions yet.
I thought that was a question.
Can I respond to that real quickly?
Let's touch on that for a second, George, and then I'll have you go ahead.
Okay. There's not a 2 mil limit there above, George. It's the maximum of either 2 mils or 23% of the basic need. In other words, whichever is greater, those two. In this case, it would be 23% of the basic need. Petersburg is nowhere near that ceiling and would not be anywhere near that ceiling with a change to a borough.
Okay, George, go ahead.
Okay, second thing was is that somebody asked, well, how would we become a recognized, unorganized borough? Interestingly enough, that was a question that I posed to the LBC way early on, and they didn't know the answer to that, so they kicked me upstairs to a guy by the name of Scott Ruby, who was the director of some muckety-muck thing above the LBC, and his response to me was, boy, that's a really interesting question, and that was the sum total of that response. So, interestingly enough, that question was asked but never answered. Another thing that has been talked about was user fees. I've talked about to a whole bunch of people a whole lot of times, and we would not be at all, we would not object at all to paying a higher user fee commensurate with what it would have been if we'd been paying inside the city taxes in order to use the library or the swimming pool. Or any of the other services that the city provides. We don't have any problem doing that. The last thing that Mr. Brennan said about running for the assembly, he hit it right on. It would be incredibly hypocritical to run for an office to be part of a governmental municipality that I don't want in the first place. My hopes are that this is going to be defeated, and so it would be totally hypocritical to run for it. And then Dana hit on it a little bit too, and that is there are a lot of times when traveling by skiff from my place to Pappy's Landing to drive into town would be problematical at best and foolhardy at worst. So anyway, those were just comments that I had that I'd kind of jotted down here as I was been listening to the program on you're streaming over the computer, which works rather well.
That's great. Well, I mean, you must be on the beach. It must be through a smartphone or something. That's good to hear.
Yeah, well, no, it's actually I came back to the place where we're staying in order to make the call. But
okay.
The sun is shining. It is beautiful.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, George.
Okay. I want to ask Manager Giesbrecht, if the borough question passes, there will be an overnight 10% increase in population and a 75 times increase in the land area you will be responsible for administering. How many additional employees do you feel, or has your studies suggested to you, that you will need to fulfill your obligations if the borough proposition passes?
Zero full-time employees, no part-time. We'll have some contract employees to get the assessments done.
Okay, then I have a follow-up to that. You say there's not going to be any need for additional employees where you're going to have this huge increase, and I can only see that there's only two ways that's possible to do that. You know, either the current city is way overstaffed or the city workers are way underworked, Or you intend to cut services. If you're managing a staff that is so underutilized that you can take such a huge increase in stride, then I would have a hard time thinking that the city could be trusted to take on such a large challenge. Or on the other hand, if the city staff is already functioning at 100% level, the only other way to do it would be to cut services. So I'd be interested in which services will you and the new borough cut.
Well, actually, if I may, George, and by the way, I'm glad you're enjoying Texas.
And George, I'm going to let you go and just listen, as I've got a couple more callers. I'm running out of time.
I got one more question for Mr. Brennan, if that's okay.
Just be quick, please.
Okay. Mr. Brennan, on behalf of the city of Petersburg, you wrote in your reply brief that the financial circumstances of the residents in the unorganized borough were irrelevant. Do you still feel that we are irrelevant, and carrying that thought to its logical conclusion, if a borough is formed, would the financial circumstances of all borough residents be irrelevant?
Okay, George, I'm going to let these guys respond. Thanks for calling in.
All right, Matt. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Go ahead, and Steve and Jim.
On the first issue, the reason we don't have to add staff is because, as it's been clearly talked about, we're not adding services. We're not providing law enforcement. We're not building a fire station. We're not building another library. Basically, that's been the key point of the whole charter, was to basically say we are not going to extend our laws and ordinances outside the service area one, which would be the city limits. Therefore, the costs do not go up. We don't need new employees, and the employees we have will continue to do the jobs they're doing today for the citizens as well as the people who come to visit Petersburg from the outlying areas and use the facilities.
And Jim, you wanted to respond also to the comment from George?
Yeah, I've been sitting here trying to figure out what he's referring to there. I don't have that reply brief in front of me. The financial circumstances of the people out there being irrelevant, I'd have to see what context that was in. I certainly cannot imagine saying that the people out there are irrelevant. They obviously are very relevant to this issue. So if it could be put in context, I would have a better opportunity to respond.
Real brief, it looks like Bob maybe could put that in. Bob, you wanted to put that in context? Or?
Well, I'd like to make two different points, but let me go back to this one that's on the table. And the context was that quite a few of the people that wrote in were very concerned about the economic situation of some of the people out that live out. And they simply don't have sufficient money to pay taxes on property out there. They own property right now, but I can guarantee they don't have the money to pay it. And there was, can't tell you how many, Jim, but there was a significant number that said that. In that reply brief, there was a paragraph to that effect saying that in this, I can't remember exactly, but essentially what it says is that their financial situation is irrelevant to the decision that's being made. I don't remember exactly how that
well, let me just say that if I don't recall what it said or the context, but if it offended people, I am sorry for that. I would have to see the context. We're not in the business of going out of our way to offend people. We're just trying to make a point. So I would have to see what it said.
Well, we have three callers waiting, and so we're going to take those callers and then wrap it up, and we're going to ask the callers to be very brief. Please make a brief comment or brief question, just one. We're going to take the question and then move on. And so we want to give these guys just a minute or so each to respond, because we do have to wrap up, so we can't take any more calls after these three that are already waiting on hold. Thank you so much for calling in. And, so we're going to go ahead and do that. Hi, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi, I'd like to make a couple of quick comments.
If you could be please brief.
I will try. I have a real problem with the people that are pro-borough calling the outliers freeloaders. They're not freeloaders.
I don't think anyone in the show called them that, actually.
Well, there have been people in the newspaper and people during the discussions of this borough formation saying that the people that come in here and use the come to the stores, come to the facilities that are here are freeloaders. Well, people have said that they don't pay their fair share. Well, if you look in the last paper and the issue of the street, Petersburg's paying 9%. The feds and the state grants, whatever, paying 91%. That means everybody in the nation or everybody in the state is helping to pay for our roads, some of the buildings that are being built here, the new infrastructure that these people in the outlying areas are being, made to feel like they're freeloading. Whereas when we take money from the state or from the federal government, we drive on this Mitkoff Highway, we're all freeloaders. People in New York don't get to use our road unless they come here and they're tourists. So, you know, give me a break here. The other thing is, Ori Bell was just saying something about senior citizens. If the borough does not rake in as much property tax as they have foreseen or they thought they would, because many of the people in the outlying areas are senior citizens, then that looks to me like they're probably going to raise the rate on the outlying property to bring in the money that they thought that they would bring in.
Okay, well, I'll take those comments. I'm going to move on to the next caller. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we do have another phone call we'll take on line two.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sorry, yeah, I turned you up a little bit too loud. I think I blasted all of our guests out of the studio. Go ahead.
Okay,
if you could be as brief as brief as you could, I appreciate it.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask, and this is partially answered actually by the mayor's comments a little bit earlier, but the reason stated for the proposed borough being that, you know, the Petersburg community needed additional revenue source. And then they also said that there would be no increased expense with the borough. And, you know, I'm a little bit on the fence. I can understand some of both sides here. But the thing that's not adding up to me is, you know, there'll be no increased expense, which either that means they're going to provide absolutely no services, which you just said. So that kind of answered while I was on hold. And so I'm wondering how you reconcile that with the Constitution taxing people without providing any services whatsoever. That just doesn't quite fly in my mind. I'm thinking, you know, maybe, you know, a grading system of like, okay, well, you're on the road, you get fire service, you know, you get this many mill rates. There ought to be deductions for people who, you know, don't get anything. I mean, you're not getting, you know, the police might have jurisdiction there, but they don't own a boat to get there to help you in time of need. So, you know, is that going to be an increased expense? Are the police going to have to buy a boat? Is there going to be a fire boat? Are they going to plow roads? You know, there's no city power, no water, no waste disposal. So these are real expenses that people, I mean, we all know, you know, I live off-grid. I've grown up that way. And it's a lot more expensive than city power. I mean, if I was close enough to plug into city power, I would, because it's way cheaper. So for those of us who are burning diesel for our heat and our power, you know, I mean, is there going to be like a subsidy to make that equal to what people in town are paying so that our taxes make a little more sense? Any answers to those questions would be appreciated.
Okay, let me get a brief comment response from either Steve or Jim, and I want to take our last caller and give everybody a chance to respond one more time. Go ahead.
This is Jim. I'm going to try to keep this real brief. I think as Steve expressed earlier, the question is, what services are we getting when we're off-grid, when we're outside? Well, the question is, what do you get from generally overall from the existence of the city of Petersburg being here? The city of Petersburg would not exist without a municipal government and municipal services that support both the private, state, and federal facilities that are in Petersburg. So the main thing that people outside are getting, admittedly, is what they already are getting. In addition to that, I can point to more participation in the municipal government. If the question is what additional extension of services am I getting out there, that would mainly be addressed by addition of a service area, if you wanted to do that, which could only be done with the consent of the voters and property owners in that area.
Finally, we're going to take this last caller, and then we're going to give everybody a chance to make some closing thoughts or bring up an issue or raise an issue if they'd like. Hi, you're on line three.
Hello, I've shortened mine to about a tenth of what I was going to say.
Yeah, if you could be as brief as you can, we've got about less than 5 minutes here. We got to let these guys go or let some of them have
really
to go.
Really glad I was raised in Fairbank and North Pole area, where both sides of political view were able to be presented in public buildings. But here in Petersburg, only one side is able to post its view in city properties, such as a gym, fire hall, public works, and city hall. I classify that as censorship, and I know other people do too. But I, as many, which I'm, my household is included, we're not either on the yes side or the no side group of the borough. We're in the middle group. I support the study, which the city deemed to remove from the public library, and the bottom line of that study said that Petersburg could not support this proposed borough charter size. yes, the pro-borough group says it's outdated. Well, when the study was done, they were correct. The economy was better. Population was strong. So if it didn't support it then, how's it going to support it now?
You're talking about the annexation study?
Correct. Also, what I was going to say is this whole debate about the borough reminds me of the debates of the inter-island ferry system debate, where some people, which are the same, some of the groups of the pro-borough and pro-borough businesses were some of the same ones that pushed, let's get part of the inter-ferry ferry system, okay, and they pushed it and said it was going to make jobs and increase income and the whole work. There was a few people that said, no, it's not going to work. Let's try to get the money elsewhere. Well, guess what? City pulled from it because it was exactly the way the no people said it would happen. Have any of those business people or pro inter-island ferry people come forward and said, whoops, we're wrong? And are they going to do the same thing if there's something wrong with this? I'm just curious about that. And the other question, I'm going to go one question. When you said earlier, I think it was Jim, Juneau can annex an area in. Isn't that only it can annex within its organized or unorganized boundaries? It can't go outside those boundaries?
Okay, well, thanks for calling in. And Jim, you can answer that. And maybe if you have a closing comment you'd like to make, and we'll go around and get everyone a chance to wrap it up here.
Okay. Actually, my closing comment sort of relates to her question. So, no, there's not that limitation, ma'am. A borough can seek to annex. There's really no limit as long as it's in compliance with the standards, and which is then evaluated by the local boundary commission. But there is no such limitations on an annexation by Juneau. And that I'd like to sort of segue that into. Never got a chance to reply to Dana's earlier comment because there have been a lot of intervening calls about scare tactics regarding a possible Juneau annexation here. And, of course, Juneau is waiting the wings. They've taken the additional steps of filing a lawsuit now against the Local Boundary Commission and the Petersburg petitioners so they can get the annexation they've been seeking, which is down to Cape Fanshawe. Question is, how does that affect Petersburg fishing industry interests? Well, I see it in two ways. One is that land decisions regarding the uplands do affect fisheries, the salmon fishermen in this town don't need any elaboration on that point. So the second point is that it is conceivable that were that Stevens Passage area annexed into the city and borough of Juneau, that it could result in a raw fish tax, such as that imposed by the Lake and Peninsula Borough, which is different from the existing state fish tax in that it is, in essence, a severance tax. It's a tax on the value of fishing, of the fish that are harvested, where they are harvested, not where they are sold. I can't say that that's what the city and borough of Juneau would do, but if we're going to talk about what is the possibility, is there a possibility that might happen if Stevens Pass were next to Juneau and they were in need of additional revenues, where all the fishing industry, almost all of the fishing industry there, originates in Petersburg? Yes, that's a possibility.
And Dan, I'm going to let you have your last word here.
Okay, it'll be a few words.
That's fine.
I disagree with what Mr. Brennan just said about the severance tax, but I'm not going to bandy words because he's a lawyer. Petersburg has a spending problem, and winning the lottery isn't going to fix it for them. This is a systemic long-term culture that has prevailed for a long time in Petersburg. It seems to result in Petersburg always choosing the most expensive option when there are choices to be made. And here are a couple of examples, one old, one new. When my father, Fred File, a civil engineer as well as a fisherman, was still alive, he suggested that the Cabin Creek pipeline be constructed along a route that would have allowed the pipe to be gravity-fed. That would have greatly lowered the cost of the pipeline and done away with the need for expensive pumps. Jeff Mucci, the mayor at the time, agreed with him, but the Petersburg City Council were persuaded to go for a far more expensive route, complete with pumps, based on the notion that the pipeline should do more than just bring water to the city. Its original intent, it should also feed the future unroaded development at Point Frederick. Years later, and after major repairs, what ought to have been a cheap, gravity-fed pipe is still not bringing water to Point Frederick residents, though now they have a road. Oh, and they pay full millage rate. A more recent example of the spare-no-expense attitude of the city's planners is the fact that opposite Bob Lynn and me today are a couple of hired spokesmen. Were there no city councilors who understand the borough issue well enough to answer call-in questions? It is true that at last May's LBC hearings, Mark Jensen still believed that organized borough formation is mandated by the state, and there were no doubt signatures gathered on the initial petition based on the strength of this false assumption. But there have been months since then for pro-borough advocates to educate themselves about what it is they're advocating. I'm not quite done. I'm almost done. Okay.
Fine, go ahead.
We are, on the outside, an economically conservative bunch of people, for the most part. We can make the dollar stretch. That's one reason some of us have sought refuge outside the bounds of the city of Petersburg. We wanted a place beyond the city's reach, because they can't stop spending money. If we believe an injustice is occurring, such as occurred in the Point Frederick subdivisions, we won't suffer it patiently. We'll go to the state to remedy the situation, and as the case may be, get Petersburg to return the money with 8% interest, as state statute currently allows property owners who've been overcharged by a municipality to do. Do you realize that though our numbers are much fewer, we are active voters and will do what we can to slow or stop any spending we view as unacceptable? If outliers had been part of the voting base this year, the beautiful new library would not be under construction right now. That project certainly would have failed. Under this current borough charter, we would be a thorn in Petersburg's side, I'm afraid. There will be no brave new world unification of the population, as Councilwoman Nancy Strand has suggested. Petersburg is a microcosm of what is happening on a large scale in our country. Runaway spending with a cliff in the near future. Unless you think the city of Petersburg has a better use for your money than you do, and your children's money and your grandchildren's money, vote no to the borough. Thank you.
And Steve Giesbrecht, city manager.
Thanks, Matt. I'll make it short.
I know you've got to go to a meeting.
The formation of the Petersburg borough helps this region. It helps the people that live inside the city limits, and it helps the people who live outside our city limits. Our quality of life here is amazing. I've lived a lot of other places. I've seen what happens when communities don't pull together. And I am in favor of the library. I'm in favor of the quality of life things that we've been able to provide for folks here, including a school system that is one of the best in the state. And we continue to want to support at that level. I think it's to all of our benefits. I appreciate the opinions of the folks that are against it, and I understand they don't want to pay taxes. No one does. And I just encourage folks to vote, whichever way it is, get out and vote. When it's over with, if it's a pro-borough vote, I encourage the folks outside to please get involved to the best of their ability and to give us ideas on how to make that better for them. I think that's the kind of the founding of how communities are built, is getting that representation, and I think we'd look forward to it.
Bob, I'm going to let you have the last word here today.
Thank you. I need to address several points here. One happens to be that we can do this, form this borough without additional people. I have over 30 years' experience supervising federal employees and so forth, and I happen to have been a supervisor for the area that this borough is going to encompass, plus all the Wrangell borough, plus part of the Ketchikan borough, plus part of the Juneau borough. And I can assure you that there is additional cost associated with this in terms of boundary disputes, in terms of law enforcement and so forth, that aren't even begin to be recognized. There's really, and if somebody says we can do it with just one or two more people, I simply do not believe it. Next point. Jim talked about the effects on the uplands. Most of those lands between Juneau and Petersburg are national forest. There is a very high standard on the water quality, the very high standard on the fish production and so forth, and I simply don't see that changing, whether Petersburg has it or whether Juneau has it. Next, let's talk about people outside of town being against funding for schools. I have not heard that at all out there. As a matter of fact, if there was a way in the unorganized borough for us to pay some portion or part of it, some mill rate back for it, I think most people would be for it. What we don't want to see is all the additional rules, regulations, and other things associated with it. We don't have now, and we simply don't need. Last, I want to address the other point that Jim made about, well, you could put a tax on the fishermen catching fish in those areas. And that's true. I agree with that. But if that occurs, you're going to see that be done throughout the state of Alaska. And I don't really think that's going to happen. Thanks.
Okay, well, thanks to our guests today. I want to thank City Manager Steve Giesbrecht, City Borough Attorney Jim Brennan, Duncan Canals, Bob Lynn, and Kuprnoff City Mayor Dan Atinas, and to all our callers for calling in. It really made the show more dynamic and interesting with the great questions and comments, so thank you very much. You will be rebroadcasting this show and make it available on the website if you missed it. And again, thanks for listening and tuning in to the show. We'll take you to some music before we go to Midday Magazine with Joe Vignicki.